everybody. Welcome back to the Midnight Terrors podcast. My name is Kevin, and I am here with my co-host, Roy slash R. Jacob Honeybrook. What's up, Roy?
Hey, what's up, Kevin? How are you doing today?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Doing well. Excited for our guest this morning or this afternoon, I guess.
Likewise. So we're back with a very special, exciting episode, something that's been in the works for a little while now. So we got contacted via social media by a very lovely writer, director, and producer to screen and then discuss his film that was doing limited release just last year, making its way around the festivals. And what an honor it was to screen the film and then have him join us today. So we are joined by writer, director, producer of The Cellar from 2024. We would like to welcome Jamie Langlands. Hey, Jamie, how's it going?
Hello, it's going good. It's all good.
Very nice. It's wonderful to see you again. We've had this in the works for a few months now. And yeah, thank you for reaching out to us and allowing us to screen the film. What an honor.
Nah, no problem, guys. No problem at all.
So we've got some questions for you today to talk about the film. Both of us just watched it this week, so it was very fresh in our heads going into the interview.
Nice.
Before we dive into The Cellar, anytime we get a new guest on Midnight Terrors, we always want to ask them the golden, basically two-part question,
okay,
which is, how did you get your start into horror, and which movies messed you up when getting into the genre?
Oh, okay. I mean, I've always loved horror films, right from when I was like 10, you know, to about 10 years old. I think the first horror film I saw was probably The Exorcist, you know, when I was about, I don't know, 9, 10 years old.
Way too young.
I mean, my brother showed it to me. He sat up, me down, and watched, you know, we watched it together. He's older than me. But yeah, that was when I was really first had nightmares from a horror film.
I bet.
And it's a weird thing, nightmares, because I kind of like having nightmares because I just like that relief of waking up. Just like, oh, okay, it's just a nightmare. So yeah, I mean, it would have started back then for me. And then I, you know, became an actor. And then I've worked on a lot of independent films. And there's a lot of independent horror films out there. So it's like you get into indie film. It's sort of like at some point you're going to be working on a horror film, you know. I mean, there's a big market for indie horror just because, you know, there's so much that can be done with it, really. And yeah, it's such a great genre because there's sort of, it's limitless, absolutely limitless.
For sure. Now, when you got into, you know, being an actor and then, you know, making your own films, did you stay pretty close to the horror genre with what you were trying to do as an actor? Or was it kind of like you were trying other things and then found your way back to horror? How did that go?
Yeah, I mean, I think as an actor, you're just thankful for any sort of job, to be honest with you. So it's like, you know, certainly when it comes to film, I think like most actors, you just want to get involved in film. It's so much fun, and you know, you're around this, the whole creative energy that everyone brings to it, and you're just sort of with people that sort of get you a little bit. So yeah, you kind of feel like you're with your people. Such, it's quite, you know, nice feeling. So yeah, I mean, as an actor, I mean, it's great working on horror films. They're so much fun. But you know, it's great working on pretty much any film as an actor, and you know, anything that's going to sort of get your creative juices flowing.
For sure.
You know, and then yeah, of course, horror has always been there. It's always been there for me. It's always been there. I think probably the first horror film I worked on, let me think now, I think it was like 22 or something like that, 22. And then, yeah, I've always been involved in either working on a horror film as an actor And obviously now the director and, helping out with other sort of productions.
Very cool. Yeah, and I like that you said the thing about when you get into working on films or things that get your creative juices flowing, you feel like you're with your people. Because Roy and I talk about this on the show all the time. We, as the show has been going for about 3 years now, we've really rallied this group of people that are all like-minded, that want to do different creative endeavors, and they start working together through those connections and things. So it's really special.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, podcasts are great as well because, yeah, like you say, you meet so many like-minded people. I mean, the film that I'm actually working on now was someone reached out to me because they saw me on a podcast like a year ago. And this is how the film I'm making now came about. So, yeah, like so much good comes out of just chatting to, like-minded people.
Absolutely. Well, that's awesome. So that kind of brings me to the first question that I have. And Roy and I both wrote down questions to kind of cover all the bases with going through The Cellar. So what was the creation process for this film, The Cellar? How did this one come to be? Did this start with you, or was this another idea that someone else brought to the table? What was the process of getting this film going?
So I remember like when I was acting in a little concept film that which was shot in one of the locations the cellar was shot, and it gave me quite a lot of inspiration just being in a certain location, and it made me want to write something like a little short film, around this location. So yeah, I mean, I put pen to paper, so to speak, and I wrote this like 10-minute short film. And then I kind of just had it there for maybe a year, just sort of there. And then I just sort of took a leap of faith. Actually, I remember the DOP. I've been, I was speaking to the DOP about this slight idea I had. He had got some new like lighting equipment and whatnot, and he was doing like lighting tests for a film he was making, and then we just got chatting one day, and then I was like, oh, maybe I should make that short film, and he was like, yeah, actually it'd be good for me to test my lighting equipment out, so I'll come
Win-win.
I'll come and work on it for free for you for a day. So then we shot this like little concept short film. And we got about 12, 13 minutes footage just from like one day of filming. And then it kind of drove me on a little bit. I was thinking, actually, maybe we can make a feature film out of this, actually. And then I just started thinking about whole new different ideas. And I just extended it and we'd shoot some stuff. And then I'd, write a bit more stuff, we'd shoot some more stuff. And it was just sort of like a process like that, really. And the more sort of we'd shoot, the more ideas that would come to me. And then I just sort of let the film kind of guide me in a sense. I sort of let the film take its own sort of path. And we just sort of went like that for like 7 or 8 months until we had like a, 85-minute film.
Wow.
There's some cool stuff you said about the creative process there, as far as you had the screenplay and it was just like a mini thing and you left it for a year. And I know in my writing that's beneficial. You maybe create something and then take a break from it and come back to it with a fresh pair of eyes. And you just think of all of this new stuff when you take a second look. And also too, you said about the film, you let it guide you. Did you go in thinking point by point how this is going to go, or were you more like, let's see how this story plays out as we're filming it?
Yeah, I went in there thinking, let's see how this story plays out.
Cool. I
Hey,
love that.
let's see what comes to mind here. And I just, yeah, I let the story take me, sort of thing. And I just sort of went with it.
Well, that's really cool though, because that kind of parallels Abigail, the main character's journey through the cellar as she is finding her story in here. It's like you're doing the same thing with that way of filming. So that's a really cool parallel there.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of just all sort of fitted into place in the end. And you know, like I said, we'd shoot something, and then I'd have like, you know, we'd edit it, I'd watch it back, and then be, oh, you know, this could then move on to this happening, and then move on to the next thing, and then the next thing, and just sort of like, we just sort of kind of went along in stages.
Very nice. Yeah, Roy and I were talking recently because a new goal that I made this year was to try to dip my toe into some writing. So working on a short story, working on a couple screenplays. I just acted in a horror film for the first time myself last November. So that's kind of got the juices going. And trying to find I find that when you like have something sit with you for a while, you sort of get more freedom to, instead of trying to pen it all out right then and there, you get more room to breathe and like things can change or new ideas can come to fruition and you can use the best things that you want to.
Yeah, exactly. And then you can find that inspiration just from like little things that just sort of come to you, you know, just randomly. And then as soon as you've got an idea, bam, write it down. You know, make sure you write it down, and you know, so you don't forget it. You know, you keep it sort of fresh. And it can literally be just like an item you see, and you think, oh wow, that'd be so cool. In the film, it looks so great, and then you'd like, okay, how can we work this into this story?
For sure. And you mentioned earlier that the idea kind of came from a conceptual story that you took part in. And you mentioned it being, very contained, kind of one location thing. And that's one thing I picked up with the film is while there are, layers to the cellar as a location, it is very contained thriller, one character for most of the film and making her way through this one area. Were there any films or any other projects that kind of inspired you to do the contained thriller route for this type of story?
I mean, the main inspiration for me was a video game from the 90s, Resident Evil.
Oh, there you go.
That's my bread and butter.
Yeah, the first Resident Evil game. I love that game. You know, that scared the hell out of me, that game. I mean, there was times when I was like too scared to even open one of those doors and go into the room because you just don't know what's behind the door. So again, I wanted that whole vibe of your sort of, in a way, you are the lead character, and you're sort of going on this journey with her, and you never know what's going to be behind the next door, or you never know what's sort of going to be next, kind of thing.
Absolutely.
And going off that too, the original Resident Evil paralleled with the cellar, you also get that feel of almost claustrophobia. When you're in there, you're underground, there's all these doors, there's narrow hallways.
Yeah, exactly. It's all very contained, and yeah, all kind of, it's very grim down there. And yeah, you get that sort of trapped, claustrophobic feeling. And yeah, so again, I play, you know, getting all of, you know, getting that sort of idea into the film, and obviously locations were vital for this film. And yeah, I was lucky enough to find some really cool locations that sometimes I'd worked in before as an actor, and I'd remembered them. Other, you know, other locations I just found for the first time, and just thought, yeah, this would be so cool to film something down here.
Now you're talking about locations. Was the cellar where it was shot, is that an actual place? That wasn't a set?
That's an actual place. It's
Really? Wow.
it's a real cellar, a wine cellar, and it's underneath a hotel down in Brighton,
Man.
near where I live. Yeah, they do like ghost walks down there and things like
That's incredible.
that. That definitely adds to the movie now, knowing that that's a real place that you could go to.
I mean, every location was a real place. No set was built at all. It was all, you know, it was all authentic, real places.
Which is kind seems like kind of a rarity for a lot of films is, a lot of things that they want to do, they don't usually have that location there. They have to make it. So the fact that all of this is real on location shooting and, working with the environment is adds to the atmosphere of the movie, because The Cellar is almost like a character in itself.
Yeah, many people said that, definitely. And I mean, I can, I think I'm quite good at telling when something's been shot on an actual made set, and in a location. And for me, watching a film or usually like a TV show, I kind of feel like times it would bring me out when I kind of know that it's a real, that's been made,
Yeah,
that's been made.
for sure. And we're talking about, The Cellar, and we're going to try our best, not to give too much away, because we definitely want to encourage our listeners to watch the film as soon as it becomes available to them. But one of the heavy themes in the movie that comes up is the theme of addiction and the battles that come with that. And as we're watching the film, Abigail, Megan's character, is almost in a battle with the cellar itself. She's finding new discoveries and learning things about herself, about other people. So speaking from like a conceptual standpoint, I was sitting there wondering, with the themes of addiction in place, what to you does the cellar represent? What would you say Abigail's struggle is with the cellar, that the cellar brings to her?
Yeah, it's almost like, again, this whole thing of being trapped, being confined. She's not in control. And it's, I mean, there's certain other parts of the film, mainly it's like with the kind of mirrors and things like that. That's sort of like quite metaphorical. I wanted to be quite metaphorical in a sense. But yeah, I mean, the cellar itself is just, again, it's kind of a metaphor of just being trapped and sort of constrained and controlled and not being free, basically, having some being in a an environment where she's completely controlled.
Yeah, gotcha. Yeah, I actually called Roy, and as I'm seeing the story unfold with, like, the AA meetings and people talking about their struggles, where my mind went was I felt like the cellar was almost like a visual representation of rock bottom that someone who has an addiction would hit, and then you
Yeah.
have to face yourself, you have to find your way through those struggles type of thing.
Yeah. I mean, this is why I love hearing stuff about the film, because so many people have come at it with their own angle, and that is something that I definitely wanted to achieve that, where people kind of peel off different layers and almost come up with their own kind of ideas of what's going on, because these are usually films that intrigue me, when it's sort of like after the film, I'm still thinking, I'm still sort of wondering, like, what's actually gone on here? What's kind of really happened, and you come up with all these ideas in your head, and then you might speak to somebody else that's also seen this film, and they've got a completely different idea in their head, and it's almost like you come up with a story yourself in your own sort of mind. And it's sort of like, your mind is obviously kind of controlling you, and you're not sort of like, it's not sort of all laid out in front of you. It's sort of like your mind's being taken somewhere else, and you're not in control of where your mind's going. It's just kind of coming up with just all sorts of different things.
And
Yeah,
you
for
said
sure.
about mirrors too. That was definitely something I picked up on, was she, Megan Abigail, would see herself in a mirror and her eyes would be different or something would be off. And discussing this now, it's almost like addiction. When you look at yourself in the mirror in a dark place like that, it's almost like you don't recognize yourself. Like, what have I become?
Yeah, no, 100%. Again, it's all these sort of metaphors and stuff that I kind of thought, that it'd be cool to put stuff like that in there. And yeah, and just see if people can pick up on like little things like this,
Yeah, I think that's a sign of really great art too, is when people can attach their own stories and their own meanings to things. And I think you and the rest of the team here really create something where people can let it marinate with them and find their own journey through the cellar in that way.
Yeah, no, it's good to hear. Yeah, it's good to hear because, like I said, I had so many different ideas, and it's almost like I'm kind of in a way learning myself what this film's all about, you know? Because I mean, all these different ideas, different people, and then taking all these different things away from it, and I don't think anyone's, I don't think two ideas are going to be exactly the same of how they kind of view this film.
Absolutely. And I think that makes for a great watch. So as the film continues to, go through its release schedule, I'm going to be very excited to see what people's interpretations of Abigail's journey are for sure. And one thing, watching the film, one of my notes was just kind of realizing that a lot of the movie is almost like a silent film style story where it's, very quiet, musically driven, visually driven. One character, not a lot of dialogue going on, which I have to say, Megan's performance here is just incredible. I mean, what an incredible talent here.
To be thrilled to, yeah, for you to, yeah, for her to, yeah.
Absolutely. She, I mean, it always looks so difficult when actors and talents have to convey those kinds of emotions by themselves. They have the set there, but they're then being told like, oh, you're going through this, now bring that to life without anybody else to play off of.
Yeah, exactly.
And so with the film being very visually driven with Megan's expressions and the set pieces, did you find that to be more freeing or more of a challenge to not be so reliant on dialogue to move the story forward?
I'd say it more freeing for me, you know. I think a lot of the time dialogue gets in the way. And the dialogue is like a distraction of what someone's really feeling, you know. It's like the silent moments in films that I think are the most important. And that's when you can usually really tell what's going on, what someone's really kind of feeling or thinking. Yeah, so I think like the dialogue a lot of the time is just sort of, I mean, I think people just use it in everyday life is people say stuff. You know, they don't really sort of mean it's just sort of like general chat, but the subtext is usually the most important thing, and that's obviously, you know, never expressed really. It's only really expressed usually in the more silent moments. So yeah, I think that there's definitely a route I wanted to go down just to explore that, and just see how much sort of emotion I can sort of get out of Megan. You know, without any dialogue, basically.
And that really goes into the old adage in storytelling of show, don't tell, meaning.
Oh yeah, exactly that. Yeah, just show, yeah, 100% show, and then, you know, let the audience make up their minds of what they think's happening.
And I mean that ties in, perfectly to, again, no spoilers for those listening, but the ending of the film with it being, again, a lot of visual stuff. Watching the film when the ending comes about, it's like a gut punch, and very little words needed, maybe one or two, and then it's just like, oh no, like this is heartbreaking,
I mean, yeah, like music, especially with horror films, like the music is so important. I mean, the music alone can tell the story, you know? I mean, you can just listen to, you can just literally listen to the score of the film, and then I'm sure you people will come up with their own story based on just the score. So yeah, it's so important in horror films. And that, I mean, the editor done the editing and the music and the color grade. So yeah, the editor really sort of crafted the film, and that was sort of when that's kind of when the filmmaking is happens in a sense, is through the edit.
Yeah, that's interesting you bring up the thing about scores because, with my working on different creative endeavors, I actually find myself listening to horror scores or scores in general a lot. And I think there's an important point there that you just made where you look at a song, because there's no lyrics or heavy instrumentation or anything like that at all times going, you get to attach your feelings and the mood you're trying to set, more so in a free way than opposed to here's a song with lyrics telling you what the song's about.
Yeah, 100%, exactly. Like, I think, yeah, with like a score, with the sellout, you know, we kind of wanted it where it wasn't sort of like overbearing too much. It was sort of like there in the background, and it's kind of having like a, you know, effect on you like subconsciously, where you're not kind of really paying much attention to it, but it's still kind of there making you feel something, if that kind of makes sense.
Definitely.
Yeah, I feel like the best set the sound design for movies is kept in that background where it kind of subconsciously adds to it. And I'm wondering too, what do you think of silence? Because I think that can be so impactful as well, whether it's a peaceful moment or building suspense, just hearing nothing for a little bit too.
It's the most powerful thing in the world. It really is. I mean, as an actor, being in a scene, not saying a word, it's so powerful. When the camera's on you and you're just there in that moment, you're not saying a word. It's such a powerful feeling as an actor to have that silence. Because it's, you know, it can just say everything. Can really create, you know, the mood, and yeah, it's so important.
Yeah, that's amazing. So one other question I had, kind of tying into the story, and then I'm going to turn it over to Roy to talk a little more about the production side of things. We see the character that Megan's playing, Abigail. She's the one that we're focused on that, again, without giving anything away, there's points where she's able to overcome the challenges of the cellar. She's resourceful, she's calm, she's quiet. She is able to overcome these challenges. And we see other characters that we've met kind of not be able to do that. They fall victim to the cellar. So what is it about Abigail as a character that you think kind of sets her apart that helps her slowly start to overcome the cellar at points? And kind of why we have, several characters. What drew you to Abigail to be the centerpiece of this story?
Well, I think that, you know, you just think of a lot of the time, you know, you're this young girl. Not very big, very petite girl. But you automatically think, you know, someone quite vulnerable. So it's almost given a bit of a voice to people that are a bit more reserved, showing their strength. And Megan is. She's really tough, Megan. She's really tough. But you see her and you think, you know, she's just super vulnerable. And she is very, in a way, she is very physically, she's very vulnerable. But she's got this resilience, this determination. I think she kind of brought that to Abigail herself. So I think that Megan's performance was sort of like she just took that character and sort of made that character her own sort of thing. So I kind of didn't need to really have much of an idea in my mind. It was more like, let's give Megan the freedom to, you know, do what she wants with this character. And yeah, it worked because, you know, like I said, physically there she's got some health issues, and there'd be times when she'd come in, she'd be on crutches. She'd do all this stuff running around, she'd be in pain. 14, 15 hours later, when she couldn't really walk properly, she was walking with a limp, and she'd just get her crutches, and yeah, and then off we'd go, you know, off location. She'd come in the morning, the crutches, at the end of the day, on the crutches. So yeah, she sort of brought this kind of character to life, I think, just for myself.
Well, that's amazing. And
That's really inspirational too, that, you know, she pushed through all that and did what she wanted to do to act in this movie. That's really cool to hear.
yeah, I mean, I kind of knew that she wouldn't want any kind of help with anything. terms of she just want to do it and not be sort of treated as someone who wasn't able to do these things. And yeah, again, you know, she wouldn't have wanted that. And I certainly didn't give it to her. I made it harder for her, if anything.
Well, that really, again, going back to the movie being very heavy and metaphorical, though, it really sounds like the set was just full of great community, great friends that were very passionate about a project and having their own personal journeys there. And then, going again into Megan's performance, it can't be undersold how great her portrayal of Abigail is. So, if Megan listens to this, we want her to know that that's very inspiring and very beautiful and amazing performance by her. So
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure she'd be thrilled to hear such praise from all of us.
Roy, I'm gonna throw it to you. Did you have some questions you want to throw out to Jamie?
I do. Before I have the ones, or before I go to the ones I had in mind, I wanted to talk quickly about the antagonists of this movie. We talked a lot about Abigail in the cellar, but she's not alone down there. There are these black-clad, cloaked, masked figures roaming around trying to stop her, right? And I really like the design of these guys, how they looked. So, I mean, where did you come up with their look, their style at?
Well, I mean, masks are scary. They're just like a kind of staple bit in horror films. So I wanted something a little bit different than just sort of like your average sort of kind of mask. I wanted it to be like a bit kind of sci-fi-ish, sort of like, you know, they're sort of underground in a cellar. There's not much air down there kind of thing. So I wanted to have this bit of sort of sci-fi look for them. And I just kind of scoured the internet through, you know, and just kind of just saw what I could find, you know, on, you know, whether it be like, you know, Amazon or, you know, other kind of sites, Temu or whatever. And that mask was it was a paintball mask that you'd use in like a paintball game. And yeah, I just found all these masks that were like kind of, I guess sort of gimmicky kind of paintball masks that you'd use in a paintball game, and I thought they looked so cool. So yeah, it came from there. It's like a paintball mask, basically.
Okay.
That's cool.
That is. You never know where you're gonna find a
No, I
good
know.
inspiration from.
Exactly.
Well, it kind of when the mask first popped up, I was kind of, you look at the cellar and you mentioned it being a wine cellar, so this makes sense. It's very like old timey,
Medieval.
feel. Yes, very
That's
much
what I was
so.
thinking.
Almost like a tomb type thing or part of a castle. And then the mask shows up and it's a little more sci-fi leaning. So it gave this really cool feel of like this story is very timeless. You can't quite pin down what period it is, what year type thing. And I always think those are cool because they make the film everlasting in my book.
Oh,
And I
that's
thought that was
cool.
really cool.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't even think about that, but it's cool to hear that.
So, Jamie, you've worked with a lot of notable directors in your career in film, including John Landis, who did American Werewolf in London, William Bridges of Stranger Things and Black Mirror, numerous other ones. I'm wondering, what were some lessons you learned, or maybe some good advice that you'd gotten from them, and how did you take that and use it in the cellar?
I mean, I kind of learned that everybody works differently, and there's no like specific way of doing something, you know, especially when it comes to like making a film or anything creative. It's sort of like whatever way you're going to do it, there's going to be some uniqueness to it. So like, I mean, John Landis, very hands-on director. Like he'd be on, you know, when I was sort of like on set with him, he'd be doing certain things that you'd expect like the set designer to do, or you know, he was like sort of fixing costumes, fixing things on set that he'd have all these people around him that could, you know, employed to do that sort of thing. But kind of he'd be doing that sort of side of things. So yeah, he was kind of like, yeah, he was just doing so much. He was doing so many different jobs, because I guess he just wanted it like his ways, and he wanted to just be so involved in the whole process. And then yeah, other directors would just kind of sit behind a monitor and just watch and let everybody else do everything. So I just sort of learned that there's no right or wrong way, or that kind of backed up the fact there's no right or wrong way. It's just a case of you do it how you think you should do it, or how you think it's going to work, or be the most impactful. So yeah, I obviously anything creative, there is no right or wrong way. But yeah, it's just again, all this sort of stuff is backed up when you kind of watch everybody else work.
So, would you consider yourself more of a hands-on director? Were you out there working with everything, location scouting, stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, that's probably more to the fact that I kind of had to, because I like people to do that sort of stuff. But yeah, I mean, with the cellar, it's like a very, very hands-on. I mean, I'm kind of doing a lot of the stuff when it comes to, yeah, I can't remember how many candles I lit in that film, but it just seemed like I was constantly lighting candles all the time. Yeah, so little stuff like that, rearranging stuff and all that kind of jazz. But again, you're wearing so many hats when you're working on indie films, you kind of
Sure.
have to do all that kind of stuff.
Director, writer, producer, candle lighter. It's all important.
Yeah,
For sure.
I made the sandwiches as well, so.
Oh, there you
Nice.
go.
Well,
all right, let's get to some of the accolades that this film is seeing. It's making rounds at the film festivals. I saw you guys at Haunted House Fear Fest in New York. You were winning awards. I mean, how does it feel seeing all your hard work that went into this, getting this type of recognition, winning these awards? And I mean, what do you think it is about this film that people are really gravitating to, that they see in it that, wow, we need to nominate this and we need to award it all these?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of expected really from when I first started on this like journey, because I never expected to even finish the film. So the fact that it's sort of like you finish your film and you think, oh, awesome, we finished it, this is such an achievement. And then it's sort of like it goes on to the next step when it's shown at a festival, and then winning an award. It just, yeah, you just kind of see it go from like strength to strength, and you never really in your mind, like a year ago, you never kind of expected any of this to happen. So yeah, you just sort of like just kind of try and take it in as much as you can. And I guess I try not to get too ahead of myself, really. I mean, it's great that it's winning awards. But again, it's sort of like it's such a subjective art form, that it's good to win the awards, but again, because of the subjectiveness of it, it's sort of like you can't congratulate yourself too much unless unless there's got this award or whatever.
Sure. So what do you think it is that people are really seeing in this to give it those awards? Do you think it's the performances? Do you think it's the story, the imagery?
I mean, I definitely think the imagery has got a lot to do with it. And I think what I've, I it's done quite well at American festivals from what I found. I think some of that might be due to the religious aspect of it. I
Okay.
know America is quite a religious country. So maybe that's got, maybe, maybe that's come into play a little bit, the sort of religious aspect of it.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't think of that.
We've definitely seen at least over here kind of a reemergence of like the cult-ish type horror. So I do think people are probably hungry for that as well. So that definitely would make sense.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's hard to sort of factor, I guess, but yeah, I think that sort of comes into play a little bit.
So you guys are next screening The Cellar at the Romford Horror Festival. How
Yeah.
excited are you guys for that one?
Man, I love the way you say Romford, you guys.
Like a real American.
Yeah, I mean that's a big festival over here in England. So yeah, I mean it's like a 4-day event. They've got like seven screens of horror films like throughout the day. It's like a big event. I think it's probably maybe I'd say the second biggest horror festival in the UK.
Wow.
And it was the first festival I submitted The Cellar to. It was the main one I wanted it to be screened at in England at least. So yeah, now it's screened at Romford. That's an achievement that I can sort of tick off for this film. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Oh, I mean, I'll be going to that festival. I mean, I haven't been to any of the others, but this is one I want to go to.
Man. That'll be an experience then. That's definitely an achievement for you that you set out to have your film there and now it's come to
Yeah.
fruition.
I know, yes. Yeah, it's so cool.
So you're not stopping, man. Like you put out The Cellar and you guys are already working on another one. It's called The RIP Man. What can you tell us about this one?
Well, it's very different to The Cellar, and it's a lot more ambitious because there's a lot more locations, a lot more actors, a lot more dialogue. Well, I mean, we actually shot. I was actually shooting today for it. There's 4 more shoot days left now. This film. It's. I mean, in terms of the plot, it's basically the RIP man himself is someone who's got a rare oral condition called anodontia. It's a real condition where you can't grow teeth. So he's every kill he makes, he takes a tooth from the victim. Yeah, so he's kind of building himself his own pair of teeth. But yeah,
Wow.
but
I like
there's
that. It's like a
that's
demented
amazing.
tooth fairy.
Yeah, there's a whole backstory that's going on because he's targeting specific people, or well, one person most specifically. There's a whole backstory about why he's doing this and how he's become the person he is now.
I'm
That's
interested to see how
amazing.
this one. I'm interested to see this one when it's fully complete. I know you guys have a like a concept film, a short concept film on YouTube of it. How's that been doing?
Again, it was just a concept short. We've actually put that short into festivals as well, or the other producer has, just to kind of see what vibe it would get and how it would do. And yeah, I mean, this has won a few awards as well, which is cool. Again, we just put it out there, try and raise some money as well, mainly. That's the main thing, trying to, get more of a budget for this film so we can sort of make it as best as we can.
Very cool.
And I like too, you said it's going to be very different from The Cellar. And that just shows versatility of your storytelling is you can make something, without dialogue that's very contained, takes place in one spot, and now you're doing something else that embodies a serial killer. And just to be able to switch it up, I like that because who wants to write the same thing every single time?
It's a whole new challenge. I mean, because I didn't write it, but when I read the script, I was like, oh my God, this is going to be challenging to make this film. Like, how the hell are we going to make this film? Little money we have, it's like almost like an impossible task. But again, we've been doing it like gradually and slowly and taking our time with it. And hopefully we're doing it justice. And again, it's just seeing where else it can kind of go and what else we can do with it.
So I got one more for you. We're predominantly a horror movie podcast here, and I know fans of movies tend to be creative, have their own ideas. You're somebody who's out here doing this. You're making movies, you're telling your stories. For somebody who has a dream of making a movie, making a video game, writing a book, or maybe they have done that and they're just kind of struggling to find their footing, out there in all of this, what advice would you give them to start out or to keep going, coming from somebody who has?
I mean, if it's something you really want to do and you want something to literally consume you and become you, then definitely do whatever it is you want to do creatively, because you kind of, I mean, in a sense, you kind of become a god in your own mind, because you're creating this whole world, you're creating this whole thing. And it's sort of like, once it's there, it's like your creation, your world. So yeah, if you want to feel like a god in a way, then you know, then yeah, definitely, yeah, you just gotta take a leap of faith and do it, really. You gotta do that, you know. It's gonna be scary. It's gonna be scary, but if you've got the guts to take that leap of faith and do it, then you know, you're gonna get somewhere with it. If you've got that passion and that drive for it, and you really want to do it, you're gonna find a way. If you really want to do it, you're gonna find a way to do it, no matter what. It depends, just depends how much you want to do it.
Yeah, that's amazing. And I'm so glad you said that about if people want to do something, the best way to do it is to just do it. Because I think between Roy and I, being creative people as well, what we see and have done to ourselves in the past is we always have these mental reasons why we can't do something. And it's very, fitting talking about The Cellar because Abigail again is a character going through that journey of things she has to overcome and then be able to make her own choices in her journey. I think that's something everybody can relate to, in that we all put up these comparisons to other things that we see. We tell ourselves we're not good at what we're trying to do, that we could never be that good. And the only way you really find out is to, pardon the potentially pun, but go through the cellar, go through the journey, and figure out how to get there. And you will get there if you just put your all into it and let it consume you. It's a good thing for your creativity to take over your life and become that outlet for you. So I'm so glad that you said that, because I think people have a tendency to get in their own way with that type of thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I had self-doubt for years before I made this. I'm probably 10 years I was thinking, oh, maybe I can make a film, maybe I can do it. And that probably lasted about 10 years, I reckon. Until I finally took a bit of a leap of faith. Yeah, and whatever you do, it's never going to be perfect. So never expect perfection. But don't let that stop you. Don't let that the thought that you're not going to get it perfect. Don't let that stop you. Just take that leap of faith and do it.
Absolutely. And so as we bring it on home, Jamie, thank you for joining us today. This has been a real treat, and again, a real honor to get to screen the film and see this journey come to life. And I want to say on behalf of all of us with Midnight Terrors Podcast that congratulations on the amazing successes to you and the whole team behind this film. It's a really, really beautiful work of art. And we are again all about just building up people who want to do creative things in general, not even just in horror. And then to see those people, realize those dreams and do things like go to that film festival and have people attach their meanings to their work of art is just a beautiful thing. And we're all about that celebration as well as celebration of horror here. So from myself and everyone at Midnight Terrors, we just want to congratulate you and all of your team on the success of The Cellar. And we just, we can't wait to continue to rally around you all. And we can't wait to see what's to come in the future. So congratulations.
Oh, awesome. Thank you guys. It's been great. It's always great talking to creative people, because they just sort of understand you a little better. But no, it's been great. Great talking to you guys. I love the backdrop as well. It's so cool.
That's another co-host of ours that made that for us. So Very,
Yes,
very cool. So real quick, as we wrap it up, what, so I know you're going to the next film festival. Going into the rest of 2025, what can we expect for the release of The Cellar? Are we looking at a wide digital release sometime, maybe physical media? What's to come for people that want to see The Cellar when they can?
so I mean it will be available worldwide. It's actually going to be at the European film market this month, you know, in a week or so, I think it starts. So it will be getting a release. I don't know when exactly, but within the next 3 or 4 months, I'd say.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, we encourage all of our listeners to check out The Cellar as soon as you can. It's going to be a journey you want to be a part of. So again, Jamie, thank you for joining us. And where can people check you all out as for, in terms of socials for following the journey of The Cellar and what you're going to be up to next?
I'm on all the social platforms, you know, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok even now as well. I'm constantly thinking of new ways to market the film. So, you know, you kind of have to be on all these
Yeah.
platforms. But I know I'm very easy to find, you know, there's no kind of escaping these days. So yeah, people
Beautiful.
can type my name in and yeah, I'll pop right up.
Fantastic. Well, thank you again, Jamie, for joining us. This has been a wonderful episode. So everybody listening, check out The Cellar. We'll be sure to promote it on our socials as well as the film comes to be able for people to see it. And yeah, thank you, Jamie, and thank you to all your team. All the best to all of y'all, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon.
100%, man. Thank you, guys. It's been great chatting to you.
Awesome. Well, thank you everybody for listening. This is it for the Midnight Terrors podcast, and we will be back very soon with more content. Thanks, everybody.